Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, mostly the British ones. I'm Eamon Clarke, and it's a huge Borag Thung too. Everybody's favourite 2000 AD fan, Conrad Lydon. Borag Thung, Conrad.
Borag Thung, Eamon. Always happy to be here on the actual book club, you know, moving over from my usual pod in the Mega City Film Club to talk about things of the printed variety.
Well, I'll do a quick statistics update because you and I had a little sort of discussion and decided that the film club episode's your co-host as opposed to guest.
Ooh, yes, we're fighting.
I think up until now you've done 7 book clubs, so this is your 8th appearance.
Oh my gosh!
It puts you tie-in with Pete Wells at the top of the table until Pete Wells returns in episode 300.
Amazing.
More of that later.
Well, happy to be here, of course. You know, I think, you know, as always with the film club as well, I think a lot of that was due to at least a brief period of us being very close together. So, you know, sort of being to hand is always helpful, I think.
Literally half a mile for a while. Yes.
Indeed. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got a book to talk about instead of a film to talk about. Tell us, what is the book that marks your 8th visit to the book club, Conrad?
It is Judge Dredd, the movie, 30th anniversary edition.
It is indeed. We have in our hands a slim trade paperback from Rebellion, a 30th anniversary edition of the movie adaptation, written by Andrew Helfer, art by, of course, Carlos Esquerra, colors Michael Danza, letters Albert de Guzman, based on the screenplay for the movie by William Wisher Jr. and Stephen D'Souza. And, of course, we've also got a cover by Dermot Power. Has Dermot Power turned up on Space Mina 2000? You must be entering that
era. Of course. Yeah, I mean, he's done – he took over for Glenn Fabry on Slane, I believe.
Right. Yes, of course he did, yeah.
When Slane was doing, like, in the Fight in England with Boudica and stuff. And then he showed up recently, actually, because I believe he did like a lot of the like concept art and design for the Judge Dredd movie. So a lot of times on Space Spinner episodes, when we have basically shots of like Stallone in the Dredd costume or pictures of like, you know, just like here's Dredd's boots, here's the lawgiver, here's the lawmaster, that kind of stuff. Those are credited on the page to Dermot Power, actually.
And I have got in my collection somewhere the DC comic version of this from 1995, which came out, according to the Grand Comics database, came out a month after the movie. I'm not sure if I've got the 2000 AD special version of this, because that also came out in 1995 as well, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I mean, I wish I had seen this comic on the store shelves at the time. I think I've talked a little bit about I remember the summer that the Dredd movie came out being very interested in Judge Dredd, being unable to find anything Judge Dredd related in the usual places that I was buying comics, which I believe at that point was like, I was, yeah, on summer vacation at the beach and sort of would go to like, you know, five and dime shops, basically, which had all like the Marvel and DC comics, but didn't have any 2000 AD stuff. I think they had Image comics. I remember buying a Savage Dragon or something like that at the time. But yeah, no Dredd, sadly.
Okay, so the cover version is by Dermot Power, as we've said. It does show the Judge Dredd 1995 movie, certainly the helmet and the top part of the costume, and also a certain facial likeness, which we'll come to in a moment. Conrad, there was this movie in 1995. It starred Sylvester Stallone. You and I have done a film club episode, 194, which is, I think, literally 100 episodes ago from this episode.
Amazing.
For anybody who doesn't know, what is the plot of Judge Dredd the movie and Judge Dredd the movie adaptation in a nutshell?
In the third millennium, the world changed. Climate, nations, all were in upheaval. Humanity itself turned violent as the planet. Oh, it's all messed up. Anyway, basically, Judge Dredd, he's the judge, jury, and executioner in the future. In Mega City 1, which is sort of centered around New York City, I think, in the film version. Anyway, you know, Dredd's a cool dude running around enforcing the law. But then he gets framed for a crime he didn't commit by his evil clone brother, Rico. He's found guilty, sent to prison, breaks out along the way, then fights his way back into the city where he eventually confronts the evil Rico who's taken over the city. They have a titanic fight, and eventually Dredd returns to his first love, which is enforcing justice on the streets. And along the way, there's a wacky sidekick. Rico's got a robot sidekick, and both of them have lady sidekicks that end up fighting, because sort of you got to have ladies, and ladies have to fight each other.
Those were the rules back then. Yes. Okay, so.
Yeah. Judge Dredd the film. It's good for the environment and okay for you.
So, Conrad, I think we've talked about this on Film Club episodes. Making films, making movies is a difficult and lengthy process. And at some point, if there's thoughts being turned to either novelization or, in this case, a comic adaptation, a version of the script goes to some creators. And that's what seems to have happened here, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, like you said, the goal of these things is that they come out at the same time as the movie, right? You don't want it to come out like way later. And so that means that, you know, you have to go with this, with the script that exists at that point. And obviously I don't think any script fully survives contact with actual filming. You know, I think it's like any plan. From one of my favorite movies, I think a plan is a list of things that don't happen. But often I think if you remember this era of reading novelizations and comicizations of things, if it comes out at the same time as the movie, it's going to be a little different. There's going to be scenes that don't make the final cut. There's going to be situations, you know, tones change, character arcs can change a little bit, all this stuff. And I want to say, like, man, I really remember as a kid, like, you know, I think even though I'm a little younger than I think maybe the average person, I do remember sort of this era where it would take years for movies to come out on VHS, right? For it to be a very long time before a movie in the theater could then be watchable again once it left the theaters, basically. You know, it'd be like maybe in a year you could get it on like premium cable if you had that. Another year it might be on TV, and then finally it might be on video or something. And so these sort of book versions were how you could interact with, you know, a piece of media you liked in that interim, basically. I remember being a kid reading novelization, you know, you read the novelization of like Star Wars, or I remember vividly having a novelization of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade as a kid, because that was the only way you could get it at that point, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I remember Alan Dean Foster's adaptation of The Alien screenplay, and of course, famous for having certain scenes in that novel that were not up on screen, although some of them, I think, were filmed and cut. But anyway, There are differences. Do you want to talk about what some of the differences you noted in this comic version of the movie that you and I watched?
And I think we might have actually mentioned this in our initial Dredd film coverage. I think probably the biggest one is that Fergie, the Rob Schneider character, dies in the end and sort of, you know, pushes Dredd to have the strength to finally prevail and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if they thought they were going to get a sequel and they better keep Rob Schneider's character alive, which is why in the movie. As you say, scripts don't survive contact with filming and with actors. no doubt still Sylvester Stallone had notes. Rob Schneider himself may have had a few notes.
Yeah, well, and I think I have heard also that there was a lot of discussion about the movie being too violent, basically, or like basically being too harshly rated when in its initial form, and so they had to make some changes to get it down to, I think, a PG-13, as I recall.
Or I think that was right. Yeah, they were trying for PG-13.
Yeah, and so I think not having a character die might be an example of that, for instance. I mean, I think little changes are that I believe, like, you've got the future swearing in the comic that isn't in the movie, your Drox and Gruds, etc. I think, honestly, though, I think, and then, like, obviously the comic just go, like, I think even in comparison to the movie, the comic goes at an incredible pace, you know. Yes.
It's very fast, isn't it?
Like, I think that, like, you know, it's sort of, there's almost like two scenes per page or something like that, you know. And then there's little differences, I think, like, I remember in the movie, there's sort of a computer hacker kind of character that basically we learn Dredd's a clone because he like removes fake things from a picture of Dredd as a baby and revealed he's like in a lab or something like that. And that's a big moment. Otherwise, it feels fairly close. I don't know if I'm missing any other big elements. I'm happy to hear what you think, Eamon, for sure.
Well, the only minor one I noticed, I mean, as you say, all the stuff about the photograph that's missing from this comic version. The minor one I noticed is, of course, that Helfer and Scarer didn't have probably what some of the props departments were going to build. So the puzzle box that's delivered to Rico in the Aspen penal colony. Here, Carlos has made it a Rubik's snake, basically.
Yeah,
that turns into a gun. But yeah, and of course, we mentioned, you know, Rob Schneider's character survives in the movie, but not in this version. Some bits have been cut out. Now, you've got one big difference in a way, because this brings us on to talking about artwork and talking about, you know, the legend that is Carlos Escara. Carlos Escara drew Dredd's face this one time.
Oh my gosh, who could imagine, you know? I mean, certainly, of course, even in the secondary comic packaged with this one, worth remarking upon, you know, and something that made such a big difference in the 2012 Dredd movie as well. I feel like I'm over it at this point, or sort of like, you know, like in the end, like I can empathize, like you're a movie star. Like you kind of, you want to, you know, your face is kind of famous. You kind of want to think that's selling the movie and stuff like that. You don't want to, you know, put your light under a bushel, if you will. You know, so I guess I can empathize. But yeah, it is such a big, even in 95, it was, you know, the joke that Dredd never takes his helmet off, even in situations where you really think he would, is well in place, you know.
So we've got, obviously, Dredd takes his helmet off and Carlos gets to draw Dredd's face. Unlike Dermot's Power on the front cover, who I think gives us Stallone's lips, possibly, there were some questions about image rights and maybe there was some backwards and forwards between Carlos and the studio, because I gather that in the end they decided not to make him look like Stallone in the comic. So he looks sort of, I would say he's a combination of a typical Carlos drawn hard, you know what sort of character, and a touch of Stallone's in him.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in the end, I don't think anybody can, you know, no one can have that Dredd chin in real life. It'd be weird, basically. You know, the character here just has way more chin geography than Stallone does. But I do think you can see Stallone a little bit in the character. But yeah, it is sort of, in the end, Escara's own version and sort of a Stallone hard case or an Ascara hard case kind of character, you know, not based on James Coburn, but still like sort of, you can see it from sort of,
genetics,
I don't
know, of James Coburn.
Yeah. Sort of just some of Ascara's, you know, Ascara's basis is for faces and stuff. I do really like how he also takes on the Rico character, you know, Armand Asante in the film, who looks more like Stallone or more like Dredd, I should say. Rico looks more like Dredd, but sort of very much Ascara does a lot to make Rico be sort of where Dredd frowns, Rico's leering and stuff, which I think is a really is a fun way to make to have those characters, you know, be twins and clones, but still be different, and you can tell them apart pretty easily, at least until the end of the comic, where it does get a little tough with sort of, you know, two large identical dudes fighting. You have to kind of keep an eye on who's who.
And Carlos drawing the movie version of the Angel Gang is particularly good fun and exciting.
Absolutely. You know, always love a chance for Mean and the boys to show up, and definitely has very fun appearance here. It's a real, again, like I feel like you get more of a chance to hang out with them in the movie because you know, everything seems to take a little bit longer. But you definitely get, yeah, Mean's real good. Paw's pretty good, I think, and pretty like recognizable from the comics. The rest of the Angel Gang a little bit more generic, I guess, but you get a sense of it for sure.
So before I ask you about the whole thing, what do you make of Carlos's art in general on this adaptation? I mean, we're going to be full of superlatives as usual, I guess, Conrad.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Carlos Ascara rarely missteps. And I think here, just drawing Dredd, and especially sort of when you've got sort of the basis stuff from the movie and, you know, from existing models and things like that, this is a great job. And it does a really good job of bringing forth actually just the version of the movie instead of the version from the comics. I think if you compare this to, I think it's interesting to compare this to, I think, contemporaneous Dredd stuff. If you look at, say, maybe The Pit or something, which would be coming out at roughly the same time in terms of Ascara's Dredd work. You know, there's definitely differences. I think there's much more flat coloring here. I think in this area, he's moving a little bit more toward digital coloring, which has a different look and feel. I definitely remember from, we've covered Wilderlands on Space Spinner in 94, which has a different look and feel than this comic. But I think this comic does do a good job of bringing the movie about. And like, you know, the sort of the big, you get a lot of the iconic images that, you know, if you've watched the film, you'd kind of know, you know, you see it pretty well brought to life in the page of the comic, and just on its own, of course, suitably masterful stuff from Carlos is always a joy to read and see on the page.
I've got an interesting question for you about Carlos Ascara as an American comics fan, Conrad. Mm. If I talk about Jack Kirby for a moment, one of the things that I've heard said is that, particularly if you look at some of Jack Kirby's earlier, perhaps more quicker produced work, British comic fans perhaps struggled initially to see what all the fuss was about. And then as Jack Kirby's artwork developed, and also I think as we get our eye in, we begin to realize just how wonderful he was. I've heard the same thing said from the opposite side of the Atlantic about Carlos's work. Did you find that when you first encountered him, or were you always a fan?
I think his stuff I always liked his stuff. I think I'm trying to remember how I would have seen it. I guess it would have been, I would have started seeing it in, like, I guess maybe those first Strontium Dogs, I suppose, yeah, to really see when Ascara comes into 2000 AD. And I was reading it, I guess. I feel like his style in the really early 2000 AD stuff is like sort of blends, like when they're shifting Dredd almost every prog and stuff like that. It's a little harder to pick them out, I think, versus consistently being on those early Strontium Dogs after the Star-Lord merger and stuff like that. I remember stuff being pretty arresting and different than other artists' stuff. I mean, I think that his style stands out from, like, I remember being in the very early stuff being more like into like Dave Gibbons, I guess, or the sort of these more sort of recognizable real like war, I guess, because of their big influence on it, like Ballin and Gibbons, who would go on to influence, who have a very US inspired style, them being more of those standouts from the really early stuff. But I think Ascara, yeah, I mean, I think Ascara is always good and then kind of grows on you as well. I think there's sort of room to be like initially identify and then also be like, oh yeah, this guy's good. Like I'll go along with this. I think I also remember, I think maybe the first thing I would have seen from Ascara might have been he did a Preacher side story, I think.
Oh right, yes he did.
Yeah. With Jesse from Preacher's, like his like, you know, evil brothers sort of doing a send up of action movies or something like that. And I remember that having a really distinctive look and liking that as well, I think. Sort of, but that sort of gets mixed in, I think, with your general Preacher stuff, I guess.
Okay, interesting. Let's talk about this movie adaptation. It is, as you say, it's fairly brief and compressed. It fitted into a DC prestige format comic in 1995 and a 2000 AD special later that same year. And it's still a fairly slim volume when it's put into this collection, mm-hmm. even with an extra story in there. What do you make of it overall? Is this good, Conrad? Do you enjoy this?
It's fine. No, like, sorry, I'm using my standard terms here. I would say it's not super essential, I guess. Like, I wouldn't, especially if you don't have nostalgia for the movie, I don't know if it's really doing that much, if it's really all that great, I guess. But it, you know, it's there to adapt the movie. And especially if you, and I mean, honestly, in doing its job of letting you remember parts from the movie, it does an okay job, although it does sort of miss out some of the most iconic lines from Stallone. Like those are a little different than they are in the movie and stuff like that. But I think, you know, it is in the end, like it's Dredd running around shooting people. There's good action. There's good character design. I wish you got a little bit. There's not a lot actually of the city, I think, which I would have liked a little bit more of. You know, in the opening of the Dredd movie, you get sort of these big sweeping landscapes of, you know, the big architecture of Mega City One, the Statue of Liberty in the middle of it and stuff like that. I would have liked a little bit more of that in the comic adaption, just because I'm always a sucker for Mega City One itself, you know. But barring that, I think yeah, it's good. But again, I don't know if you don't have nostalgia for the film, I'd rush out and get it. If you like the, you know, obviously if you have nostalgia for the film, this is a great way. This is a great companion to your Blu-ray of it on the shelf or something like that.
We've mentioned it a couple of times. This trade also features a reprint from Prog 2262, a story called Trinity by Ken Niemand, with art by Richard Elson and letters by Annie Parkhouse, a trans-dimensional, a multiverse-type story in which our Judge Dredd, the one we know, meets the two movie versions in a story. A bit of fun included at the end. What did you make of that one, Conrad?
I mean, this is a, like you say, it is a bit of fun, basically. You know, it's got a villain that is very noticeable for our modern times. I'll and say no more of that. But, you know, obviously the big money, of course, is seeing these different Dredds interact with each other, and they do all the jokes that you'd hope they do. You know, there's a lot of ribbing on Stallone Dredd with his double whammies and his taking off his helmet and stuff. I think the really interesting thing is 2000 AD Dredd sort of chiding Carl Urban dread for being so quick to execute people and stuff like that. I think that's a really interesting like piece of the comic and stuff. And then just, yeah, all the little jokes about each other, you know, making fun of Carl Urban for having body armor, you know, like, oh, you're expecting to get shot, that kind of stuff. It's fun because, again, it's just sort of taking all these jokes that we have and sort of making them explicit in the as they interact with each other and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, the great jokes are in there. Particularly the moment when 2012 Dread says to Comics Dread, he's not wearing his, do you ever? Nope, not on the street. You know, yeah, we love that. Yeah, Ken Neiman and Richard Olsen having some fun here, making all the jokes about, as you say, the Stallone version. And it's a fun inclusion. It's a great little story.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's definitely the best, like, what you'd want, like, definitely the best story to include to fill out this volume, the times that the movie Dread had, you know, that the movie Dreads have shown up in the comic and stuff.
I mean, it's a great little fun addition at the end. It's a fun story. And it, as you say, pads out this trade to make it big enough for Rebellion to put it out. So the 30th anniversary edition of Judge Dredd, the movie by Andrew Helfer and Carlos Esquerra is available for $15.99, $9.99 digital, $16 in the US. And it's a sort of, yeah, it's okay. It's fine. As Conrad would say.
Sorry, you know. Yeah, I mean, but like in the end, like there are definitely better like Dread paperbacks that you can get out there, you know, and especially if you don't have a lot of nostalgia for the, like I said, nostalgia for the movie, then it just sort of, you know, it's just not like, not essential, I guess. I don't know.
I probably should say that this was one I put on the roster for us, Conrad, rather than you picking this one. The world waits. The 2080 world waits to see what you'll pick for your next book club. But, of course, you're very busy, which we'll come to in a moment.
That's true. It's been a while since I've been on the book club, actually. I have to figure out what we can talk about there that'll be fun and in the remit of this era or of the era I'm working on, I'd imagine.
Before we do that, let's give you a grail page or two. If we imagine that we could get all the Carlos Esquerra art or the Dermot Power cover or something from Rich Nelson, have you got a page or two you would pick from this collection, Conrad?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think in the end, it's going to be hard for anybody to not pick page 9 of the PDF version I have here, which is just the full page image of Judge Dredd, codpiece and all, placing this block under arrest. You know, that's just with the Lawmaster in the background. That's real good. It's hard. That's hard to beat, I think, actually, because there aren't a ton of big splash pages. In the, you know, big full image pages in the course of this special. But I think low key, actually, I think my favorite page might be page 31 on the PDF, which is this montage between Judge Fargo, who's resigned and is heading out on the long walk, being interplayed with Dredd being stripped of his rank as a judge and sent to the Aspen Penal Colony, with this narration that's very very ritualistic and like cool, you know, let the betrayer of the law be taken from our courts, his armor taken from him and all his garb of justice and that kind of stuff. I think that's a really neat page, actually. And is one of my favorite parts of the movie, actually, as well. So definitely something I'd love to have up on my wall, in the extensive wall of Conrad's Grail page library.
Excellent stuff. Well, look, we're going to give you all those pages. Two pages from the main story by Carlos Esquerra. You cannot, as you say, you can't resist Carlos doing the full page splash from the movie. I am Judge. It's Judge Dredd. Drop your weapons. This block is under arrest. You got the Law Master. He's got the Law Giver. You got everything in there. You got the whole codpiece and the
absolutely the whole kit and caboodle. It's a good time, you know.
Marvelous stuff. I might take a bit of Carlos drawing the Angel Gang, actually, for my page. Possibly their first appearance in this adaptation, where they're watching the flying ship coming in across the horizon. And yeah, so I might take that page. I'm also tempted by the Richard Elson moment when Dredd is sort of traveling through the dimensional warp. Elson does that wonderful little sort of almost collage image of various different Dredds drawn by various different artists over the years. Superbly done by Richard Elson, possibly one of my favorite things that I've ever seen.
Absolutely. I really like that too. You can definitely, like, if you know your Dredds, you definitely can see a bunch of them in there. There's the Ascara one right up in the front with that distinctive jagged black line. I definitely see a Cliff Robinson one in the back and stuff like that. There's, yeah, definitely some fun Dredds in this series.
So I will post all these images when this episode comes out next week as episode 294. 100 episodes since we covered the Judge Dredd movie in a film club episode.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, two films. Anyway, so there it is. The Judge Dredd, the 30th anniversary of edition of the movie adaptation from Rebellion. A lot of fun and some interesting. We'd love to have some Carlos pages from it to own and keep. That would just be wonderful.
Absolutely. You know, any, you know, again, anybody wants to slide in my way, I'll certainly take them. Although I don't know, I don't feel like I'm the best steward of original art, but I wouldn't say no, I guess.
No, who would say no to any Carlos Ascara page? As I speak, they are in Heritage Auctions. They are auctioning some Carlos pages today. And we were talking about his early concept sketch for Dredd on his Lawmaster, which went, I think, for $50,000, which is astonishing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so we turn to guest projects, and Conrad Leiden is a busy chap at the moment because Space Spinner 2000 back and cranking out new episodes.
That's right. Yeah, we're in the middle. Yeah, in the middle of it. We're punching our way through 1995, and indeed, we're right. You know, like we are. You know, the movie's still a couple months away. I'd say it'll come. Like the movie will come out during our coverage in June of this year, but still extremely close, and definitely everything we're having now has stills from the movie. Everybody's very excited about it and stuff like that. So it's very much encapsulating that that period, that movie related period of 2000 AD. We're having a lot of fun. We got a new host, Alex, here, who's never read really any to that, you know, is a newbie to Dredd in 2000 AD and diving in with both feet as we make our way. And of course, over on Big Meg One, where we're also on the same feed where we talk about the magazine, my buddy Eli's there, and we're all sort of, yeah, again, just having, you know, looking at this stuff, having a great time in the magazine. Anderson's about to come back after her long sojourn into space, which I'm very excited about. And yeah, just generally really interesting times in on Space Spinner. We're right at the end of what I read up to originally. I read up to like Prog 1000. So very much in these final days, there's some really fun stuff coming up, including like the Pit, the start of Sinister Dexter, all these sorts of things that we'll be having in the next year or so from Space Spinner. It's a great time to listen to the podcast. It's fun.
It's back. Space Spinner 2000 is back. The Big Meg 1 continues. SpaceSpinner2000.com. And wherever you find podcasts, wherever you find this podcast. Yeah,
wherever you listen to this, you'll find Space Spinner as well. We'd love to have you. As always, I say it's the counterpoint to Mega City Book Club, where Eamon has... He jumps around and finds the best of 2000 AD. Space Spinner is so much more, you know, raking through, you know, slogging through the muck and the mire as well. You know, we'll see the heights. We'll also see the bottoms. And I think that makes it a good time. Absolutely.
Space Pinner 2000. They take the rough with the smooth.
Oh, my. All right. The gentleman's relish, indeed.
And just a quick update on episode 300. I had previously set everybody the challenge of trying to find the top 10 2000 AD covers of all time. I realized, thanks to some correspondence I had from various emailers, that I'd set people too hard a challenge to try and narrow down to 10 issues.
I know, I haven't done mine yet. I'm very daunted by having to pick from the, 3,000 possible?
Yeah.
And more if you include magazines and stuff like that.
So what I've decided to do for episode 300, we'll still cover that voting, but I think it's too wide a spread to be statistically significant. But what I'm going to do is refocus you on your top 10 2000 AD covers from progs 1 to 300. So narrow it down. The first 300, pick 10 covers, send them to mcbcpodcast@gmail.com or drop by the socials or come on the forums where there's a thread and put your votes in there. The top 10 covers from the first 300 episodes, and that the results will be announced on episode 300 of this podcast.
Ah, good branding. I like this. All right, fantastic.
It makes far more sense. I messed it up the first time, Conrad. Hopefully we get it right this time.
Oh, you're fine, Eamon. Listen, as someone who's done their own 300th episode, I can tell you that it's always a challenge, to get it all together, for sure.
So thank you very much, Conrad. Thanks for giving up some time on this Sunday, early morning for you while your cat's sitting. You might have heard a few cat noises in the background of this episode. Thank you very much again, as ever, Conrad.
Of course, always happy to be here on the book club. Always happy to talk to you, Eamon, about these thrills and comics and things of that nature, for sure.
Absolutely. And fascinating to hear a little bit about, the experience in the Carlos Sesquera phenomenon from the other side of the pond. Interesting stuff.
Fantastic.
And thank you to everyone for listening to Mega City Book Club. As ever, find links at megacitybookclub.com, including links to the inimitable spacespinner2000.com. Follow us on all the socials, at least on all the nice ones. We're not on the X at all. But email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. If you've got a book, a story, a creator that you want to come on the book club and talk about, if you've got a film that you can suggest to me and Conrad for film club, or to email me your top 10 2000 AD covers from the first 300 progs, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. Conrad, we've done it. We've done our double whammy. Until next time, when we're passing judgment on another great book, time for goodbyes. Goodbye from me and
a splendid vertrig for me.